So I was driving somewhere recently, and after I arrived, I realized that I had almost no memory of the journey. And it wasn't because anything crazy or especially weird happened. It was just because that my brain had apparently decided that the whole thing could just run on autopilot, while the rest of me was somewhere else doing whatever it is that brains do when they're not being supervised. Things like playing old conversations, pointlessly worrying about the future, maybe composing a very articulate response to a situation from 7 years ago that doesn't matter anymore whatsoever. So the usual stuff. And I sat there in the car for a minute thinking, how much of my life consists of this? How much time gets eaten up this way in our lives? And I thought to myself, well, certainly more than I'd like to calculate and admit to, that's for damn sure. Because I've noticed that there is this thing that seems to happen when modern life reaches a certain velocity. The days start passing in this way that's technically full. It's full of tasks, and inputs and obligations and things to respond to, and yet somehow also completely empty of anything that you'd actually remember if someone asked you about it later on. Funny how that happens. And underneath all of that busyness, a lot of people are carrying this persistent feeling that something isn't right. And that the life that they're living and the life that they could be living or would rather be living, those are definitely operating in two different worlds, almost like there's an alternate reality version. Though I wouldn't say this is a catastrophic situation or something that requires immediate intervention or a DSM diagnosis or something. There's just this quiet, consistent background signal, kind of like a distant car alarm a few blocks away that's it's been going off for so long that everyone's stopped consciously hearing it. Except then you have the disturbing realization that the alarm is actually coming from inside the house. All right, so there was this philosopher named Charles Taylor who wrote a book called The Ethics of Authenticity. And he makes this point that modern culture promised us individual freedom and self-expression, but instead it delivered a kind of shallow and like a directionless individualism that ultimately leaves people more lost than liberated. And I think the mechanism that he identified, it matters because what happens is that people consciously, it's not that they consciously choose the wrong life, okay? It's that the path of least resistance is, it's so well designed and so thoroughly paved and signposted and socially reinforced that most people just follow it. And it's not necessarily out of stupidity or weakness, though some of that's true. It's mostly just because following it is easy and questioning it is hard. And, you know, there's always something that's demanding your attention. Like getting the job and the degree, the certificate, hitting all the milestones, performing the adult, you know, performing adulthood convincingly enough that nobody asks too many questions. And so the autopilot, it isn't really laziness. The autopilot is, it's the accumulated weight of social expectation and economic pressure. And it's just the sheer cognitive load of processing modern existence, which leaves almost no bandwidth for the harder question, which is whether any of this is actually what you want, or whether you just ended up here the way that you end up somewhere after a drive that you don't remember. And, you know, I find myself thinking about the utter absurdity of spending so much energy and time where you are building a life that you never consciously chose in the first place. I mean, it's sort of like repainting the walls of a house that you moved into by accident, but you've been, you know, too busy to notice that you actually don't like. But now the paint color is perfect, very on trend, very Instagram worthy. And meanwhile, the foundation of the house is making some rather concerning noises, but that's a problem for future you. Future you will handle it, right? Because future you is extremely capable and well-adjusted and has their shit together. Okay. Here's where it gets a little uncomfortable, but I think it's worth going there anyway. So underneath the autopilot problem and the check engine light, there is something more specific happening. It's something that most people are working pretty hard to not think about directly. You are going to die. And at some point, that's completely unknown to you right now, all of this ends. And not in some abstract, philosophical, someday, faraway sense. In a very real, non-negotiable, no extension possible sense. And now, I'm not saying this to be morbid or anything like that. I'm saying it because Ernest Becker, who wrote one of the more important books of the 20th century called The Denial of Death, he argued that this awareness of your own mortality and everyone else's, you know, when you let it truly sink in, rather than immediately try to suppress it, this is one of the most clarifying, though terrifying, forces available to a human being. Now, Becker's argument was that most human civilization it's essentially an elaborate system that we've made for not thinking about this. So it's all built on denial. Whether it's status games, legacy projects, productivity obsessions, you know, personal brands, whatever. At some level, all of these things are just responses to the awareness that time is finite and it's non-refundable. And, you know, we just keep busy in a multitude of ways so we don't have to feel this. And we distract ourselves, which is totally understandable. And also, if you follow the logic here, I think it does explain quite a lot about the autopilot mode. Because my belief on this is that being truly aware of your own mortality from the human consciousness perspective, it's frankly a form of insanity. And most of us are just doing the best we can to deal with this underlying psychosis. Because no other creature, as far as we know of, has to carry this specific burden quite the way that we do. And I do want to be sensitive here because the science on animal consciousness is a little more complicated than it used to be. But, you know, whatever dogs and elephants and crows and dolphins are experiencing, they don't appear to be lying awake at 3 a.m. running numbers on their own mortality while simultaneously worrying about their content calendar or schedule or whatever it is that we do. You know, non-human animals don't suffer from the effects of the narrative ego. And the thing is, you know, if you view our version of consciousness as an upgrade, I think that's fairly debatable because an upgrade implies that the system actually functions better. But I think what we might have gotten instead is a level of consciousness that it outpaced the psychological infrastructure that was designed to support it. You know, could it be possible that we passed some filter that other species didn't? And if that's true, maybe that filter was there for a good reason. Maybe we weren't supposed to pass it. Or at the very least, we weren't supposed to pass it at this stage. I don't know. Things to ponder. I do think Becker was probably correct that this is less an evolutionary gift and more an evolutionary mistake. We became conscious enough to understand our own situation, but not equipped enough to hold that understanding without it. You know, occasionally doing, which occasionally does serious damage to our ability to just function day to day. And so we build these distractions and all these, you know, these elaborate systems and rituals and so forth that are designed to keep the awareness at arm's length. And our subconscious awareness, you know, designed to keep our subconscious awareness of the inevitable void that enables the trauma that we enact against ourselves and each other in so many ways, to so many different degrees. Because sitting fully with the awareness of your own finitude is something that the human mind finds almost unbearable to sustain for more than about 30 seconds before it starts looking for something else to do, to think about. And then there's the neuroscientist David Eagleman, who's written about time perception. More specifically, he wrote about why time seems to accelerate as you get older. And there seems to be a lot of, I see a lot of discussion about this particular topic these days. So his explanation is pretty straightforward, and I would say slightly horrifying. So the brain encodes novelty. That's its focus. So new experiences get remembered in detail. On the other hand, routine experiences, like the mundane stuff, those seem to just blur together, and they essentially don't get recorded. And so this means that the more you live on autopilot, the faster that your life subjectivity disappears. And you're not imagining it. The time is actually going faster because you stop giving your brain anything worth remembering. Okay, so here's something that I find interesting about this particular moment in time. And I want to be careful because this territory can tip into rather vague spiritual language pretty quickly. And that's not where I'm trying to go to here. Now, there does seem to be something happening at a collective level that I think is worth giving a name to, because the feeling that we've been describing, you know, that nagging sense of that something isn't right, the autopilot recognition, the check engine light, I don't think this is primarily a personal experience anymore. I think it's actually distributed universally. I mean, there are a lot of people now arriving at a similar place without any coordination, without a shared ideology or anyone organizing this. Carl Jung wrote about what he called the collective unconscious. Which is, it's this idea that certain patterns and feelings emerge across cultures and individuals at the same time without any direct communication. And I'm not necessarily invoking this in a like a mystical way or something. This is a more practical observation about what seems to be happening structurally, like right now. Because if you look at the cultural signals that are happening, like all this widespread distrust of institutions and the declining faith in progress narratives, and not to mention the exhaustion that keeps showing up across very different kinds of people and in very different circumstances, all of this starts to feel like there's a collective recognition happening. That the current arrangement isn't exactly working. And that something clearly needs to change. But, you know, I also get this this disturbing sense that the window for changing it feels like it's narrowing rather than opening. And I find something both alarming and clarifying about that. I mean, it's alarming for pretty obvious reasons, but it's clarifying because collective recognitions at scale tend to precede collective shifts. Not automatically or without, you know, enormous effort and probably considerable chaos, but the feeling usually comes before the change, which means that the discomfort, it doesn't always necessarily mean it's a sign that something is ending. I mean, something is ending, but it could also be a sign that something is trying to begin. You know, something's trying to be born out of this. All right, so this next thing that I want to discuss, it might potentially tip over into motivational speech territory, but I'd rather it didn't. Because, well, I suppose the obvious move at this point would be to say, okay, we've identified the feeling, we understand the autopilot, we've sat with the mortality piece, now here's what to do about it. There's just five easy steps. There's a framework and a morning practice that takes about 11 minutes and changes everything. It's amazing. Right. Well, of course, I'm not going to do that. Partly because I don't have one and I don't think there is such a thing. And partly because I think the demand for a system is itself part of the autopilot situation. That's really just another way of outsourcing the harder thing, the process that can be followed without fully feeling it. There is this philosopher and a theologian named Paul Tillich, who wrote about what he called the courage to be. And so his view was that the kind of courage that modern life requires, it isn't heroic or dramatic. It's just the ordinary, daily, you know, boring, unglamorous act of existing honestly and authentically in the face of anxiety rather than around it. And I think most people already know what their version of that looks like in their lives. You know, the thing that they keep not doing, the conversation they keep not having, the creative work, the relationship, the version of their life that keeps getting rescheduled for later when conditions will supposedly be better. And the conditions are not exactly getting better, in case you haven't noticed. And that's not meant to be pessimism, by the way. That's the reality. That's actually the data. So I think Tillich would say the anxiety about doing the thing is not a sign that you shouldn't do it. it's a sign that you're actually paying attention to something that actually matters, which is honestly, that's more useful than the podcast that I heard recently that was explaining how to become a frictionless productivity cyborg, which seems to be advice that's given out frequently these days. And, yeah. All right, so I want to bring this back to the drive again that I talked about in the beginning. You know, the arriving somewhere with almost no memory of how you got there. I mean, that image it's been sitting in the back of my mind as I've been talking about this. And for whatever reason, it feels like it's actually doing more work than it appears to be. Though I wouldn't go as far as to call it a metaphor for wasted time. I think it's closer to the gap between being present in your own life and just passing through it. Between inhabiting the experience and just, you know, merely logging the miles. And the feeling of that nagging, persistent check engine light, I think what that's pointing at is space or a gap without demanding some immediate transformation or a, you know, some complete life overhaul or something. So it's really just a matter of recognizing that the distance between the life being lived and the life that could be lived is real. And that future you is probably not going to close that gap either. You know, it's just radical acceptance. Because future you is really just current you with a slightly different set of problems and the same amount of bandwidth, pretty much. Now, the thing is, the capable, well-adjusted version of yourself who finally has it together, that person isn't coming. That person, you know, if you look back into your history, that person has been rescheduled consistently since approximately your mid-20s, and there is no sign of an arrival. So I think the question, it isn't when the conditions will finally be right. The question is, what do you do with that fact, the fact that they probably won't be ever? And look, I don't have a nice simple answer to that. I'm not sure anybody does. But the feeling itself, the clarity that's, you know, wearing anxiety's clothes, I think it's trying to tell you something real and authentic. And, you know, maybe the first step is just stopping long enough to actually hear it, listen to it, before you arrive somewhere else and can't remember how the hell you got there. And there's a lot more I could say about this subject, but I think for now, I'm going to stop there. And as I always say, thanks so much. for listening.